This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. No Brian Rowitz this week, but I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee, along with Jonathan Hood from ESPN Chicago, who was keeping me company as I was driving up to Green Bay on Sunday. So make sure you listen to Jay Hood every Sunday, SiriusXM Pro Wrestling Nation, 9 a.m. until noon Eastern time. What's going on, Jay Hood?
You know what's going on. Professional wrestling is wild and wacky, and the hope is that you and I are not going to be cut like some of the WWE ID or NXT talent. Hopefully they keep us on the Good Karma Brands roster for a while.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I've made it 23 years. I'm getting long in the tooth, though. Maybe they decide to cut the wily vets go.
Wait, you are the R-Truth of this company.
Wait, how long have you been there? Yeah, it's that long. Where we begin, though, this week is the shocking storyline developments that happened in WWE and ended Monday Night Raw. That is the Vision breaking up as Seth Rollins was attacked by Big Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker. Seemingly also Paul Heyman aligning with the two younger guys of that stable, blowing up the Vision. Seth Rollins now seemingly by himself. So the question becomes, did the Vision storyline work?
Yes. And would continue to work if Seth Rollins wasn't injured. I honestly believe with the whole, if it is true, and we've been duped before about this injury thing with Seth, if he did that coast-to-coast headbutt, that dive that he did at Crown, if he hurt himself with that, Gabe, and he's out, then that's a problem. That's the reason why you want to break it up. Because it would be weird for Seth Rollins to say, yeah, I'm going to need shoulder surgery, hold down the fort until I come back. Nah, let's just cut ties now. We don't have 6 months to wait. If he was healthy, I'm not sure that we have a divide between Seth Rollins and the other Vision members.
I'm really curious as to the actual injury, if it is, if it isn't. I think some fan took a picture of the fan was getting ice cream, and so was Seth Rollins, and Seth was in a sling. But then they still did, obviously, the breakup angle, and he took some bumps to end Monday Night Raw. So we'll have to wait and see what the injury news is there, if he has to relinquish a championship, if he's going to try to wrestle CM Punk and then Punk wins the championship. Who the heck knows when it comes to that? But I don't. So to me, the Vision storyline will work if this is the thing that catapults Bron Breakker to that next level. Because it feels like we've been waiting for that. And I enjoyed the Vision storyline. I liked it. And honestly, Bronson Reed probably became bigger than they anticipated, because when Bronson Reed joined the group, I'm like, well, every group needs to have somebody when you have a faction like that that's going to be eating pins, you know, and kind of protect Seth. And obviously, Bron Breakker's one of the guys. But then they had Bronson Reed go over Roman Reigns at the PLE. So, you know, he's kind of getting a pretty good rub from this as well. Like, there's a very there's a possibility, and we always make the jokes, if somebody's got to be Jannetty in the group, there's a possibility that nobody's going to end up being the Jannetty here, because they've put Bronson Reed in some pretty good spots. And obviously we know what the future of Bron Breakker, I think, holds, and that's a future world champion. So having all these guys come together, run roughshod, and now the young guys, and I like, I'm going back to what if the injury factors in or not, because I kind of like that they accelerated the timeline here, because they started kind of teasing like, oh, these guys might break away if Seth loses last week on television, where in the backstage segment with Paul Heyman and the Bronze, they ask, well, what's going to happen if he loses? And you didn't get the answer from Paul Heyman of like, oh, he's, you know, when Seth asked the question, you're not going to lose. It was kind of a different answer for those two. And then you had the looks on their faces when Seth Rollins was saying he didn't need anybody to kick off Monday Night Raw before they finally attack him to close out the show. And how many times have we seen dissension sowed within the Judgment Day? And the Judgment Day hasn't broken up, right? We've seen this so many times. So the fact that we see this dissension on our television screens and then it quickly has a resolution of, hey, we're breaking off, I kind of enjoyed the acceleration and kind of throwing that curveball, because WWE under Triple H really likes to try to drag these things out, and that's not what happened here.
I just think that it would still be going on if it wasn't for the Seth injury, though, Gabe.
Yeah, it's possible.
But I'd like to ask you this. When that happened, first of all, we should set the scene. going back to the beginning of Monday Night Raw, where Seth makes the promo all about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the one with the vision, and I don't need these guys. He was giving the breadcrumbs of saying, all this is because of me. And the look that Paul Heyman had looking at Seth Rollins, the look that Bron Breakker had looking at Seth Rollins, we still had no indication that there was going to be a turn, but just the look that they had. And then, of course, at the end, where you see the graphic at the bottom, Lee Fitting and Paul Levesque, so long, everybody. There's the executive producers, slates on the bottom. All right, we're gone. And then the way they did it, it wasn't like a pan out. It was all completely unexpected. Breakker to smash Seth Rollins. You know, it made me wonder who's the good guy and who's the bad guy in this situation. Seth doing all the talking, saying it's about me, and then the Bronze and Heyman turn on Seth. It makes me wonder who's the bad guy there.
Well, Seth is just such an interesting character anyway, because everyone loves to do the sing-along with his entrance.
Yeah.
Everyone loves to do the sing-along when he goes, I am the visionary, I'm the revolutionary, I'm Seth, and then the crowd yells, freaking Rollins. But then he also still gets the boos, but he's getting... So it's just kind of an interesting character. I could see it going either way, but obviously I think you're trying to set it up for them to be the baby faces out of this, are you not? Because I don't see... Like, Seth suddenly is not a sympathetic figure to me just because he got attacked by those two. Although typically, when you associate yourself with Paul Heyman, you are the heel.
Yes.
You know, when I think of when CM Punk, going back how many ever years, when Paul Heyman reappeared on our televisions with CM Punk, like when CM Punk made his heel turn as part of that long run as champion, it was, I'm associating myself with Paul Heyman. When Roman Reigns was the heel to start the whole Bloodline storyline, when Roman came back, what did they do? Roman's sitting in a room, and the camera slowly pans back, and there's Paul Heyman. Like, if you're associating yourself with Paul, chances are you're going to be the bad guy. But also, is this just going to be a heel versus heel situation? Because I don't think Seth's sympathetic in this situation.
No. I mean, that vision, I can use that term, of Rollins being on the ground, and then it's Heyman and Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. It's kind of like, well, you would think that those are the bad guys, but it's just hard to tell. It's hard to tell. And by the way, I just don't know how soon we're going to see Seth, but I just know that these other two are going to get on a run here. And we should also bring this up too, whether or not it's just going to be those three, or do they bring in someone else to replace Seth at that top spot or to be aligned with the vision? I don't know the answer to that as well. I've been hearing names of a guy that was supposed to be great and was not, that might be coming to this group. Maybe, maybe not. There's a name that's out there that we haven't seen in a long time.
Are you going to share the name?
Well, there's a name that's out there. Well, let's put it this way. His tag team partner is aligned with a great tag team.
Tag team partner...
He's aligned is one of the great tag teams with the New Day.
Okay. Very interesting.
So not Grayson Waller, but his old tag team partner.
Okay. I mean, you can't bring him to be the top guy because he's below both of the guys that are there. So I don't know if does Bron Breakker then ascend to that top guy of the group and then you bring in the third? I'm assuming that would be the way to do that.
Yes.
But that, because that group is also going to need something to do if Seth's injury is going to keep him out any length of time. A, obviously he's going to have to relinquish the championship. B, like, you're going to need something for this group to do, because clearly this group wants to get revenge. Seth wants to get revenge. And maybe Seth, if he ends up going on the shelf, then Seth can come back as a babyface looking to get returned for these guys who injured him and that sort of thing whenever he comes back. If that is indeed the case, we'll have to wait and see what happens on Monday Night Raw, if he comes out, what the deal is, because we have a number one contender. We know that CM Punk, we had that match. CM Punk is the number one contender for that World Heavyweight Championship. So there's a lot of layers here if Seth legitimately has some sort of serious shoulder injury.
I don't have ChatGPT in this studio, so you got to look up that name. Grayson Waller's tag team partner was who? What was the name?
Austin Theory.
Yeah, so Austin Theory is apparently Heyman's very high on him, apparently, in the back. Now, again, This could be a John Moxley, Marina Shafir situation. I don't know where we were. I remember on this show, we talked about it. Just like, why is Moxley high on Shafir? And then Shafir proved herself, right?
Yep. But
apparently he is a big on Austin Theory. So he's been injured. He'll be back. Who knows if he'll be part of that faction too? Who knows? I don't know. But I've been hearing that.
I just can't imagine what the crowd reaction. And look, Paul might be right, but can you imagine the crowd reaction if they're, you know, get out there on Monday night, we injured Seth, but we don't feel complete. Here's our third member, and A-Town Down hits. Like, that's going to be like, oh, okay, sure.
It's the Rey Mysterio, the 30th man. It's like,
yeah, very similar. Like, everyone's like, oh, who are they going to? Oh, this guy. And again, Theory could turn out to be great for the group if that's the direction they go. I'm just saying his debut is going to be very forgettable if that's the way they decide to bring him back, because he has not done anything that is worth like promoting in being like, oh yeah, this is the guy, because I mean, yeah, sure, he beat Cena. Nobody remembers that he beat Cena. The only thing they remember from that WrestleMania is the promo that Cena cut against him.
Yes.
That hey, doesn't matter if you win, doesn't matter if you lose, I'm still coming out on top. And John hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah, he buried that young man in a big way. So I guess to answer the question, sir, I believe that division was successful. I don't believe what social media, what the internet wrestling community says when they say that, no, Rollins wasn't a fit. What do you mean he wasn't a fit? Yes, he was a fit.
I don't buy that. I think this was fantastic. I think it made sense storyline-wise of Heyman aligning with him. Because again, Roman, more of a babyface, right? CM Punk, more of a babyface. Heyman's just a heel. That's who he is. That's his professional wrestling persona for 40 years at this point. So it made sense that Seth like would do whatever he could to beat and win that triple threat at WrestleMania, align himself with Paul Heyman, and then bringing in the young guys that they did. I don't know how you can look at this as anything but a success, especially if Bronson Reed continues to be over as he is.
Yeah, so Bronson Reed had his biggest win in his career against Roman Reigns. I know it's a lot of craziness and a lot of moving parts, but Reed got – you know how few pinfalls that Roman's taken over the last 5 years? Like two?
So those two in single matches, and then he ate the pin – when him and Solo tagged against the Usos.
That's it.
When they did Bloodline Civil War. That's why they were making the big deal of, oh, in singles action, here's the only times he's been pinned. So I think that only adds one more. Like, I think that's three times in the last 5 years he's eaten a pinfall. One for Jay, and then singles-wise, one for Cody, former world champions, and now eating one for Bronson Reed is a big deal, I think.
As we've taught you many times, kids, on Good Karma Wrestling, if a superstar starts first, someone that's untouchable, usually that person's going to lose. Yeah. He wants to get back to the hotel. He's done. He's like, all right, I'll do this. Let me get back to the hotel. MJF's done it. Cena's done it. So we know what that is.
Brock Lesnar. That is the calling card of Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Lesnar's either main eventing or going out first. There's no in-between for Brock.
I'll leave. Let me just get this out the way. All right, guys, thanks. And just take your rolling suitcase and just leave. That's it. And so I'm very intrigued, Gabe, about how this moves forward with Seth and then the Vision, because Reed, as you mentioned, Reed and Bron Breakker could be single stars, but they're a formidable tag team. I can't wait to see what's next with both of these guys and with Heyman in the middle. It's awesome.
And that's how you know the answer to the question is yes. You can't wait to see what's next for everybody involved. That's how you know the turn worked, everything ended up working on Monday, and that this storyline worked. But we're going to dive into some other top stories, a lot of things to get to in the world of professional wrestling. We call it Three Count. And where we start at number one this week is AEW Wrestle Dream, coming up this Saturday on pay-per-view, HBO Max, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. What is going to be the biggest story coming out of WrestleDream? Just a quick reminder of the matches that are currently scheduled for WrestleDream: Darby Allin versus Jon Moxley in an I Quit match, Hangman Adam Page goes head-to-head with Samoa Joe for the AEW World Championship. Chris Statlander head-to-head with Timeless Tony Storm for the AEW Women's Championship. Jurassic Express taking on the Young Bucks, where the winners will receive a $500,000 cash prize. Kyle Fletcher puts his TNT Championship on the line against Mark Briscoe. Brodito taking on the Don Callis family combo of Okada and Takeshita for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. Jamie Hayter going head-to-head with Tekla in a singles match. And in a Tornadoes Trios match, the Hurt Syndicate will take on the Demand. What do you think is going to be the biggest storyline coming out of those matches at WrestleDream this weekend?
Boy, that card's too short for AEW. I thought you were going to keep going.
Before we figure out what the biggest story is, how long is the I Quit match going to be?
Well, that's so good it should be lights out and should be the main event. That's the best match on the card.
Yes.
To answer the question, there is no what I would consider a major story coming out of this. Yeah, I could see Okada and Takeshita being tag team champions. You know, weird bedfellows, you know, perfect strangers, even though they're part of the same faction, they don't like each other, but they're tag team champions. So that's one thing, but that's not a big story. I think the big story is that I feel like Bryan Danielson will have something to say about this I Quit match. I feel like that even though there's no restrictions like previous matches, Bryan, do not involve yourself in this match. Don't involve yourself. Okay, I'll just be a – I feel like he's going to involve himself somehow because – Darby and Moxley are doing cinema, absolute magic.
Doing that in between the, I thought last night was fantastic.
Oh my God, Gabe! Like, so it's the best thing on Dynamite. It was the best thing that we saw. So how do you know? I'm always interested in how this all works, right? Do you go to suburban Kansas City and do you say, hey, do you have a jail cell open? Do you have
Hey, Warden, do you happen to have could we just borrow the room? Like, we just want, you know, like for an hour or two. Like, we just want to shoot this thing for TV. Would you be okay if you guys have all those glass partitions where visitors aren't allowed direct contact, but we could do something like that?
Brother, that's the best thing that we saw, man. Especially from Darby's standpoint, from his viewpoint with the camera. Folks, if you've not seen this, Gabe and I are telling you, you got to see this because it's so unlike AEW. And they were doing a movie scene right there. The blood of Darby just, again, smeared against the window, right? Mm-hmm. It was so well done. To me, that's the best thing that we're going to see. But outside of maybe Danielson interfering himself in the matchup, I'm not sure if there's anything that's going to be like, oh my God, on this card.
I think that, I mean, but this is, to your point, this has been the biggest story in AEW. You know, just because, again, we know with the world champ, we know that Samoa Joe, as much as I think we all adore Samoa Joe, he's not walking out the world champ. Just not going to happen. We know that. Everybody knows that. Is that going to be a hell of a match? Absolutely. Has Samoa Joe done a great job of selling it in the very short time that they've had? Absolutely. But Joe's not winning. So I honestly don't know who's going to win. I assume Darby goes over in this instance. So my question then is, okay, what do you have to do to make John Moxley say I quit? Like, that's the story. Or even if Mox wins, what does he have to do? Because that was the story then at the end of the show last night when Darby's like slowly plodding his way down toward the ring and he's eating shot after shot. Like, Darby's not going to say I quit. What do you have to do to John Moxley to say I quit? And to do that, I think that's a huge moment as well of Darby going over Mox. And to your point, like that should be the main event. It should be the main event, even though I know AEW loves putting that world championship in the main event spot. But this is your best story. And the best way to end this pay-per-view is Darby standing tall with Mox defeated after saying the two words that you know he doesn't want to say.
See, here's the fly in the ointment, Tim Brando. The fly in the ointment is when Mox lost the championship, was that by submission? Did he tap out?
He tapped out.
So he can say, I've had enough. I wish that was a 1-2-3 when he lost the championship. So that way we've never seen Moxley submit. But we already saw it in Arlington for when Hangman Page won the championship. Okay, so more than likely, Moxley will say, I quit. I just don't know in which way. The thing I don't want is the way that I quit matches have been over the last 10 years. And that is, hey, I've got your friend in peril. I'm going to slit his throat. You better say I quit. That's what we've been seeing lately, which sucks. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. But if you did that to any member of the Death Riders, Moxley's just going to say, go ahead.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like the character that Mox is currently playing, like if they were to do that in this instance, and I think Moxley being involved knows this, if you're right and Danielson gets involved, Danielson knows this, like the John Moxley's character, while he does enjoy the company of the stable that he's built, he doesn't give a rip about any of them. Like it is more important to him to not say I quit. Yeah, go ahead. Like I've got a vision for this company that's bigger than Yuta. Like, go ahead, take out Yuta. Go ahead, take out Marina Shafir. Go ahead and take out Claudio. Go ahead and take out Pac. I don't care because my vision goes beyond them. I'm not going to say I quit just because you threatened them. Like, that's the character that Mox is currently portraying. So I think he knows something in that instance of, hey, this is... They have to actually do something to Moxley himself to make him say I quit.
I feel like Darby has some of that as well. Like whoever his cronies are, like it's
yeah.
So I think that also he would not say I quit. If that is the case, man, that's just for all that buildup, for everything we've seen. Hopefully, we don't get that finish. Something I've been thinking about though, Gabe, when it comes to Darby Allin, just himself. Darby Allin is booked better than Hangman Page.
Mm-hmm.
If you brought somebody that never watched AEW, you'd say, "Oh, is that the world champion?" Because he's on TV a lot, and his promos are great. He just did an interview with Ariel Helwani and said, I don't care about the championship. He said that. Wow, he said he didn't care about the – he said he just cares about the – pretty much said I care about the stories more so than championship. He kind of ripped wrestling as a genre.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Like, that's controversial. So, to me, him being out there doing all the interviews, the way he's been billed on Collision and Dynamite – it's like that guy is the top guy in the company. Just the way he's going after Death Riders. He's going about it better than Hangman Page did. Hangman Page did it by himself, got his ass beat. Sometimes he needed to have Samoa Joe and the crew. But Darby's willing to do it by himself. He's willing to take all the bullets and still survive somehow. I feel like, doesn't he feel like more of the top of the company than the actual world champion?
I think what they're basically doing is still executing their idea of, and Brian said this forever, I think we fought it just because I still have a hard time seeing Darby Allin as the world champion of AEW, but I think they're basically just kind of continuing the storyline without the championship that they probably wanted to do for Darby once he got back from climbing Mount Everest, but Hangman had just gotten so over that they couldn't ignore and have Mox walk out of the champ with the championship in Arlington. You just couldn't do it. And I don't disagree with that booking decision honestly, it's making everybody look better. Like the Death Riders have been, I would say for most of 2025, the Death Riders have been interesting. Like despite it starting out and being really slow, everything they've done with Hangman and now everything they're doing with Darby has made them as a group really interesting. You know, they've added Pac back into the mix and, yeah, I think they're just kind of continuing with that storyline of whatever they thought it was going to look like when Darby eventually went over. And they're just continuing along of these two just hate each other and they're just going to go head to head. And again, that's a storyline that always works in professional wrestling when you have two guys who are just so morally opposed and hate each other. And now you need an I quit match. It's been an impeccably told story so far.
It's a feather in your cap, Gabe Neitzel, for you to be a Mox fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, or Darby Allin to say, yeah, the team leader, the locker room leader is John Moxley. And Darby knows the internet conjecture and what we've said on this show clearly about John Moxley and him being world champion. We said, okay, get the belt off of him. This is not going anywhere. We haven't seen the championships in a lockbox. What the hell's going on? And in some ways, Moxley stabilized AEW to be able to ramp up to mm-hmm. Page being the champion. But I'm like, all the flowers went to Moxley. We were saying, we kept waiting for the vacation, right? hey, championship, you're going away, right? And he just keeps coming back. He keeps coming back. And I'm sure from Tony Khan's standpoint, he appreciates Moxley, because if he's a locker room leader, has no desires of going back to WWE, an AEW guy through and through, and he's doing this for Darby Allin and for others, hey, man, he's one of the best in the company. You got to give him credit. So to your credit as a fan, he's doing exactly what you thought he would be, and that's the guy in AEW in a lot of ways.
Does Jon Moxley get lit on fire on Saturday?
Yes, but we don't see the repercussions of it on Wednesday.
He comes back completely fine.
Because we just saw this. Did we not just see this before?
He's fine. It was just a little fire. It wasn't a big fire. It was a little fire that got him. He's fine.
We just saw this. Don't you remember when Darby had the flamethrower?
Yeah.
And so he had the flame, whatever it was. But he put Moxley on fire, and he came back next Wednesday. He was still doing his thing, moving around, moving the neck around. He was fine.
That's what I was. I'm just wondering if the flamethrower makes a reappearance.
No, but yes, but he's fine. Wednesday, he's fine.
Fire is not that big of a deal in the world of professional wrestling. What match steals the show?
Okay, so that's the one we've been talking about is at the top. You know, I'm looking at this, and I don't know. I mean, I think that Bandido and Okada and Takeshita is going to be a really good matchup. I don't know. Kyle Fletcher says taking on Briscoe. Okay,
The sneakiest match on here to me is Tekla and Jamie Hayter. I think this is a really big opportunity for Hayter because we know she can go. Like before injury, like she proved she can go. I think if they give that match time, I think that's got an opportunity to where you're going to walk away and go, wow, that was a lot better than what I was expecting.
If I can get it one-on-one, I'll take it. But if there's going to be outside interference with the groups, I don't like that.
Yeah, I think there. I mean, unfortunately, with the Triangle of Madness, I think you are going to get some interference in that match.
I like Stat and Storm as far as the build for this. They've been very active trying to get this thing going. It's great. But the problem is that it's Chris Statlander on the other side as a champion, and I just don't buy in. I just don't buy into her. She makes it seem like in her promo yesterday that she's evolved into what's next. I still don't know who she is. Who is she?
I don't know, but Renee losing her cool and spiking her jacket during their interview yesterday was my favorite part of the whole thing. Because yes. they're all losing clothes, and Renee's like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing here. It was fantastic.
She's having
great job by Renee.
She's having so much fun. She's having so much fun. I like Storm and Statlander. I think that Toni Storm can continue to be nuts even without the championship. It just shows you, man, you got a great personality. You have something that people enjoy. A championship does not define you. You define you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep. 100%.
Is there anything else that we're missing? Like, I think it's a solid card, Gabe. But nothing like pops to me. Like, oh my god, outside of the I Quit match, is there anything else that I really want to see that I'm like, oh my god, I can't wait to see this.
I mean, I think Express versus the Young Bucks is going to be fun. But yeah, I don't think there's anything big that comes out of that. The $500,000 cash prize thing. I mean, I know that's what they're doing with the Jacksons, but it's not enough for me to care. But I think the match is going to be fun.
So the problem is that when you continue to have these, when you do the stipulation once, you keep doing it, talking about cash prizes or you're an 8-man and it's worth this much. If I never see the money, then I know it's a gimmick. But back in the day,
you didn't see the physical money, but you at least saw what the Young Bucks were doing with it, right? They had the bag, they'd pull out some of the cash from time to time, and then I forget which brother lost it all in the casino, so now they're the Broke Bucks again. Like, I think you at least saw it in concept. You may have not seen the actual $500,000, but you at least saw it in concept.
Once, but you know that Tony Khan has these like 6-man or 8-man matches as well. You see this on Collision a lot.
And it's
this used to be bounty money. Harley Race actually had the attaché case, opening it up, and it's like, that's $25,000, and he ripped through it, and it's like, oh, man, it is actually petty cash. He's got the money right there. Like, you could see it in the briefcase. When we see $500,000 in bags or in a, if I don't see it, then just not it, then I'm lost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
We move on to number two this week on the three counts. Dwayne The Rock Johnson doing interview rounds talking about the Smashing Machine, which I saw. Solid. He's really good in it. Emily Blunt's really good in it. The story itself is, I think, probably has a couple holes in it, but I digress. Didn't do very well in the box office. But The Rock talking about John Cena and his admiration that he has for Cena, making a joke of how he could be involved, but not really. So the question, though, becomes, because Dwayne threw it out into the universe, will The Rock somehow be involved in John Cena's final match?
Yes, he should. If nothing else, to give a handshake. He should be able to, no angle, just to say that, you know, thank you for everything that you've done. Involved, like, after the match, not during the match, but afterwards. Now, I know that for some, you don't want the stink of The Rock being around because of how that heel turn did not work for John Cena. You don't want him around. It brings up back bad memories. But I would say that that would be a nice touch for Dwayne Johnson, who didn't show up at WrestleMania, none of these other PLEs, no Raw, no SmackDown, to be able to at least say, thank you, John, and then that'll be all. But, like, rock bottoms or, like, physicality, who knows if The Rock's body's ready for that, Gabe, but I would say that it would be nice for him to be there in D.C. for John Cena's last match.
Yeah, I mean, I would like for him to be there, like, but it just doesn't make sense. Like, I just don't know. Like you said, if it's credits are rolling, you know, or, you know, all of a sudden you hear, if you smile, and he comes out and it's just a handshake and he raises John's hand. I think that would suffice. I think that would be good. But it was, I don't know whose idea it is. I know everybody's pointing fingers at everybody else in terms of the heel turn. The heel turn could have worked. I think it could have worked if Dwayne could have been around more to help explain all of the actions, but he wasn't. And I just don't know what purpose it would serve storyline-wise for Rock to suddenly come back and get involved. Like, if he's coming back as Dwayne Johnson, who sits on the board of TKO, celebrating John Cena, sure. But if he is the final boss, no interest in that. No interest in seeing the final boss, because the last time we saw you, none of this ended up making any sense. And it ended up with kind of a bad run for John Cena, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm sure people would like to see that match. I don't know if The Rock's even wrestling anymore. Think about how he looked in that movie. Now look at mm-hmm. him now. He lost a lot of weight. So I don't think he's in wrestling shape at all. By the way, The Rock coming there, as you just laid out, just raising the arm of Cena, doesn't take anything away from Cena. It's just part of a celebration. It wouldn't surprise me if a whole bunch of wrestlers that have not been around fill the ring to celebrate with Cena. That wouldn't surprise me. The Rock being one of them. I got no problem with that. It's no problem at all.
Well, especially if the last, again, right now it's rumored and this can always change, but the rumored last opponent for Cena is Gunther. And again, building Gunther back up as the guy who retired both Bill Goldberg and John Cena. Okay, that's interesting. What do they do with that going forward? And involving The Rock into that somehow just would complicate and mess things up. Like, Gunther doesn't need that. Gunther's already a former world champion. Gunther, you know, is what I guess he could be considered the latest version and maybe an upgraded version of the Legend Killer gimmick that Randy Orton did so many years ago. But actually retiring guys, being the last match and having them go out on his back, like, A, makes sense. B, you don't need a lot to build it up because Cena's only got a handful more of appearances. Like, it's not like he's going to be appearing a bunch to set up and be able to do promos for his final match on Saturday night's main events in December.
Right.
So, but having Gunther be there to be able to cut some promos, talk himself up, like, that makes a ton of sense. And again, the Rock getting involved there, I don't know how I could connect those dots.
By the way, Cena goes over in the matchup against Gunther, right?
No.
That's legendary status right there, brother. Legend. Could you imagine?
Well, and it'd be the one time, because Cena, going into him finally winning the world championship, like, part of that storyline is he had lost how many times? Like, he lost to Solo Sikoa. He lost to Austin Theory. He had lost all these one-on-one matchups. Mm-hmm. As we discussed earlier, it didn't do anything for Austin Theory. I don't feel like it really did anything for Solo. But this being John's last match, and Gunther goes over, for the first time, I think that could actually do something for someone. Of, hey, I went over John Cena. I retired that man.
Go ahead.
I think that could do a lot.
No, I was just gonna. I'm gonna talk about something I was wrong about, and I could be all day with that. But I was wrong about Cena and his comeuppance against Lesnar. Cena did business with Lesnar. It's like, well, Brock, you're gonna be here. I'm not, so I'll just put you over. I was surprised that there's not more money in Cena and Brock again, but I guess not. I guess that was it. Like WrestlePalooza, and that's it.
I guess my problem with that is, like, that doesn't, to me, that you just didn't need to do the match. Like, to me, Cena, the last handful of dates he has are just so precious because we only have so many. To waste one on a squash match with Lesnar and then to have Lesnar go away from television seemed kind of a waste. And I think I'm going to stand by that. If Brock was still around and they were building Brock into something else, like, by the time Brock comes back, Cena's already going to be gone and retired. And if I'm right about Gunther going over him, then the Brock win doesn't mean quite as much.
I think that's fair to say. I thought that there would be money in Cena, first of all, just being squashed by Brock Lesnar and him saying, you know what, I can't go out like that. I need to have another match with him.
Yeah.
And I guess here's the thing. How about this? I would have preferred Brock and Cena over Cena AJ Styles. It's so much from what we saw. Like, mm-hmm. maybe eventually we'd get AJ Styles, but I didn't need it right then and there. They just made up a match and out of whole cloth on social media. I just don't know. I just think that the dynamic of Cena and Lesnar in the ring together, especially how violent Brock can be, how he just broke Cena the way he did. You want that on your? All I know is that John Cena, the John Cena I know, would have gotten revenge at some point.
Again, the squash match makes more sense then. If it ends up being a one final Cena has to get over the hump, and at Saturday's night main event, he somehow finds a way to get over Lesnar, and he gets to go out, you know, on top the way that, you know, Sting got to go out on top in AEW. Like that makes a ton more sense to me. But the fact that it was just a one-off and Brock's probably gone until the Rumble, it doesn't do anything for me. No. But it certainly had the potential to do something, because the other thing about that is, like, you don't need Brock and John around to build that match up for the final match.
Yeah.
And if Brock's not going to be around, that's fine. You can do a couple vignettes with Cena, play those on Monday Night Raw. Like, that would be enough because there's so much history there. And you could even see Cena goes, hey, I can't be on TV. I got to be training my ass off. This is my last match, my last chance to go over Brock Lesnar, and I got to do it. And that's why I'm not on TV. Sold. Easy.
I think since we have you on the record, I look forward to seeing now we're going to get with Gunther and Cena. You know, if we could turn the clock back, this would be a completely U.S. versus Austrian situation. All kind of bunting and a whole bunch of flat American flags out there. Like, this is John Cena representing the United States, and then here's the big, mean, you know, Austrian and Gunther, who hates America, taking on the all-American boy, John Cena.
You get an extra little, like, he'd hold the salute position just a hair longer as John's coming to the ring. Like, yeah.
and it's in Washington, D.C. That's why you do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, that's a thing too. I wonder, since we don't have Brian here, you and I could talk about this because, you know, Brian's wild. So I wonder, Gabe, will we get a situation with our other sports that you and I cover on a daily basis, baseball, basketball, football, in which a country is going to bid on one of our major sports, as far as the finals, NBA, World Series, like we're getting in wrestling. I mean, so the Saudis have money on top of money on top of money. And they've already got UFC and WWE in their back pocket. Whatever they want, right? You get a Royal Rumble. You get the world's greatest Royal Rumble. You get a WrestleMania. UFC gets their big shows there. I wonder, would some of the sports that you and I cover on a regular basis on ESPN, will we get that where some where Major League Baseball goes, yeah, we'll have a neutral site, Saudi, Japan, someplace else. Our Super Bowl, Saudi, Australia. Just like we see.
So, with in the NFL, like I feel like they've teased doing a Super Bowl in London. Like I feel like that's something that's at least crossed somebody's mind who makes decisions in the NFL. They're overseas all the time. I don't know if they're there yet, you know, because the Super Bowl's already neutral site. Hey, so let's see. We've got 2 weeks before the game. Everybody can go over there early, do all the things. But I don't know how they would feel about what that would do to the TV ratings back in the States. Like, would you draw as many people at noon on a, or you know, noon central, 1 p.m., whatever they would have to have the game, which would have to be a little bit later. I don't think they can do it when they typically do the London games now and have a Super Bowl on at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. I don't think they can do that. They'd have to kick it off a little bit later than maybe the fans in London would want. But would they be cool with a 1 p.m. Eastern Super Bowl? Would as many people watch than when it's on at 6 p.m. Eastern? I don't know. And that's something that they would have to decide since TV, while they do want to expand internationally, the TV revenue is the engine that drives the bus for all the major sports. So I think the NFL would be the only one that would consider it. And the only other country other than like London and the NFL like would be Saudi. Like if Saudi's willing to lose, and there's a lot of reports about how much money they have lost in with their golf league and live, if they're cool with lighting that type of money on fire just to have Phil Mickelson, what kind of money would they be willing to light on fire to have an NFL game there?
Yes, I think they're willing to do it. As long as the oil flows, they'll be willing to do it. I think, but by the way, if it's baseball with the World Series, you and I love day baseball. We love we love a good 110, a good 105. Oh,
people are complaining about, man, why are the Brewers playing at 1 o'clock? Wow, fantastic. Hey, watch this game. I got other stuff I got to get to, man. It's fantastic.
I don't know about the rest of the country, but you and I here in the covered wagons of the Midwest, you and I love a good 105. Oh, we don't mind.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Day baseball, it's nothing quite like it.
I think it's something that's worth just exploring moving forward, you and I. And, you know, Brian, just why? Who knows? Who knows what the ideas are? But I think it's worth talking about. If a country is worth, if they are willing to pay through the nose to have your product in their country, how much is that worth to you? What about us in America? Because WWE and UFC have left us behind. What about other sports? Golf? What about the rest of it? I just want to know whether or not Rob Manfred has a price, or does Roger Goodell have a price? Right? It's curious.
If the Saudis offered $2 billion to host a Super Bowl, is that high enough, or do they got to go higher?
Well, what's the TV deal? Is it a TV deal in the billions with a B?
Yeah. Look that up really quick right now.
Yeah, because look, when you start talking Bs, as in billions, Gabe, then now that's a starting point. And you can go as high as you want because they'll always have the money. The Saudis will always have the money for it. Australia's a different story. I found it interesting at the RAC Arena. They said, you know, Michael Cole said, it's 13,000 people. I'm like, I could have filled Pfizer Forum for 20. With 18,000, 19,000, I could fill the United Center with 18,000, 19,000. But the point is, though, is that Australia paid WWE to come there. So even though it's 13,000, still it's the attendance money and then the money they get paid to be in Australia. So, but that TV deal, I mean, I think that that's a good starting point for the NFL. We could see it there.
So I just a quick research, and this is just quick rough math. I believe they get right now about $8 billion per year in their TV contract. It might be $8 to $9 billion per year on the TV contracts that they have out there. So if Saudi offered $2 billion for a game,
I think they would be in. Yep.
And it doesn't seem that crazy that they would do that.
No, I never thought that WWE would be going this deep into the Saudis, pardon the expression, and same thing with UFC, but they're deep in the pockets. They're getting paid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're going to get paid in the UK and Australia. They're going to get paid in Saudi Arabia. So they want you to come there because you're the Harlem Globetrotters. You're the Ice Capades. That's why they want you to be there.
The sad part about all this is I think my dream of having a Royal Rumble at AmFam Field here in Milwaukee is dead.
Is it ready yet? Again, is it winterized?
It's not ready, no. I believe this offseason is when they're starting the winterizing, and I think they're going to do that this offseason to winterize it. So, like, starting in 27, they could have had, like, a Royal Rumble. But I don't think Milwaukee has the money for a Royal Rumble. After everything else that's been thrown out there with the money that WWE is making.
And there was Gabe Neitzel throwing his Brewers hat across the room when he found out that the Survivor Series is going to be in Petco Park in San Diego. He goes, San Diego? What about us?
We could have done it. Could have done it. But, you know, again, the dream still lives. I'm hoping we could do something inside AmFam Field. My hope was Royal Rumble, but maybe ends up being a Survivor Series. Finally, in the three count, number three, we dive into, I guess, the other end of what happened with Division. Because Division celebrating, they were victorious because, well, Seth Rollins won. That means somebody had to lose. And that was Cody Rhodes taking the pin from Seth Rollins as part of Crown Jewel down in Australia. We'll maybe find out this answer tomorrow night on SmackDown. But what's next for Cody?
I do not know. Next topic. Because if it's nothing spectacular, Gabe, then we're going back to Nakamura again. Like, I'm just telling you, like, I mean,
but Shin, I mean, it seems like Shin's a babyface. He came back for the open challenge for Sammy with like his babyface music and everybody was cheering him. He wasn't missing anybody.
Yeah. So this is quite the conundrum, because if it's not good, then what is this world title run? Seriously. Like We talked about this ad nauseum on this show. It was important for Cody to take on the Bloodline because that's what kept the story going. It was Cody against Roman, and it just kept Cody viable because he wants to finish the story. He wins the world championship, loses the title, gets it back. And so now, what is next for Cody? I don't know the answer to that. Give me that hot baby face that's ready. Is that Bron Breakker? Is that Bronson Reed?
I mean, maybe the Vision shows up as, or whatever we're calling them going forward. Maybe they show up. It feels kind of early to go, hey, I'm going to take on this world champ, because, and maybe that's what they have to do. Because again, if it all depends upon if Seth's injured or not, I honestly don't know what's not. I mean, in a Randy Orton turn, feels like we've been waiting for that for a while, that he would then take on Randy Orton. I don't know.
It for such a hot company, it sounds very uninspired. You can't, I mean, because you can't even go back to the McIntyre well. That's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's dry now. You can't bring that match back. And by
the only way Drew McIntyre can be involved in a title match is if he's going to win.
It's just it's you've exhausted that match and those possibilities so much that the audience does not believe in McIntyre being world champion. It's true.
Yeah.
So that's a hell of a question. I just don't know the answer, because like you said, maybe on SmackDown we'll get a little bit more clarity on who wants the title. But it does feel like you have to turn somebody to give Cody a viable opponent. Like what we saw with Seth Rollins, again, it's for a made up championship, the Crown Jewel Championship of Australia. It didn't really matter as much to me. I'm not even sure if it really moved the meter for Seth, quite frankly, because the 0-3, you just knew that Seth was going to win because they kept putting the 0-3 out there to you. Oh, you know, Seth can beat Cody. Well, that means that Seth's going to beat Cody. But now I don't know what's next for Cody. Look at is it someone from NXT that I'm missing?
I don't know. Cause I'm looking at the SmackDown roster right now, and it's again, not that it could be someone from Raw, because this doesn't mean anything. But Aleister Black's tied up with Damian Priest.
Okay.
I mean, again, Drew McIntyre, no. Jacob Fatu?
Nope, not turning.
So that leaves us basically with, I mean, Santos Escobar just signed a contract extension.
Oh, is that the restructuring to prop him up as a contender for the Undisputed title? Is that it?
Maybe. I don't know. I honestly, it's, other than that, it's got to be Randy Orton. Well, because
go to the Raw side, Gabe. Click the Raw side and tell me, you said Randy Orton, but again, it's just like, are there any fresh matches? Is there any something different that we haven't seen from Cody?
Wow, Chad Gable's still the speed champion? That's interesting.
Good, move on. give me a fresh match.
A fresh match. Kofi Kingston?
Oh, I wish.
I don't know. I mean, Rusev? Sheamus? No. I don't know. There's no real fresh matchup, I think, that you can throw out there that makes a ton of sense.
Rusev is hell-bent on winning that Intercontinental title, right? Against Dominic Mysterio?
Yeah.
So Rusev, that makes Rusev a babyface somehow, right?
Correct.
Or is Dom the babyface? See?
Dom might be the babyface. I don't know. Despite being, like, because much like Eddie, as he continues to steal from Eddie's bag, people are cheering on everything he's doing because he had the hammer that helped him win the championship as well, that he was able to tuck away in his boot, the bell hammer, tucked away that thing in his boot. He's just taken every play, every page out of the Eddie Guerrero playbook. I mean, lie, cheat, and steal. Do whatever he can to hold on to that IC title.
By the way, that matchup is not official because there was no bell that rang at the end. So that match is unofficial.
Okay.
There was no bell. There was no hammer.
That's true. There was no, wait, what happened to that? What happened to the bell? What happened to the hammer?
So that answers the question. You're right. SmackDown should give you clarity, but at the same time, as hot as the company is, you have an undisputed champion and you don't have five young up-and-coming contenders, or you haven't built towards something to say these guys are going after Cody's undisputed championship. That's not good. And then you have another champion that's kind of hurt because CM Punk, I think, is going to be the next World Heavyweight Champion. I think just by default. Mm-hmm. It's not LA Knight. It's not one of. It's not an Uso. Who is it for Cody? That's not good.
Yeah, I'm looking over both the rosters. I can't make anything make sense.
It's going to be Obafemi coming out. That's what's going to happen. Obafemi coming in.
That would be exciting. That's a fresh new matchup.
Yeah, because he's spinning his wheels right now with the big guy. We saw that in a house show. He was a guest on this show with MVP. Mm-hmm. But I think that's not good.
Omos?
Omos, yeah. Is he also, on your roster, by the way? Do you see?
I did not see Omos on either of the rosters. Maybe he's a free agent. WWE free agents. Yes. Like the way that's what I'm saying. WWE free agent. Because I forget who they did that the last time they did like the official roster. Well, but this guy's a free agent. What brand is he going to sign with? Maybe that's what Omos is doing. I don't know. It's been so long since we've seen that man on our televisions. I know he's under contract, but he's not on either roster as of right now.
Well, sorry, Brian. This will be a no contest. Have no idea what Cody's going after. We'll see.
We dive into news and notes this week. Where we start, Mike Chioda is saying that WWE referees should be in the Hall of Fame. And then JBL on his podcast agreed, listing off a number of different officials, including Chioda, he thinks that could be in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Sure. Yeah, I got no problem with that. Tommy Young from the NWA should be number one, who should be in somebody's Hall of Fame. He was the greatest referee in NWA, WCW. In WWE, Chioda should be there. He was a part of a lot of those main events.
Earl Hebner.
Joey Morella, either Hebner, by the way, Dave or Earl.
Yeah. Charles Robinson.
Charles Robinson. Charles Robinson is not only a referee, but helps the ring crew. Can you imagine that? That only is he, but he's there like before and after setting up the ring. I mean, think about that. He doesn't have to do that. I mean, you're a tenured referee. He helps make sure that the ring is set up, get the turnbuckles ready. That's a great guy, Charles Robinson. I think that he deserves his flowers. And WCW, WWE guy, does a Nick Patrick make the Hall of Fame? The guy's 6'7", and he's laying down like he's on a pillow. The left-hander with the three guys laying down. God almighty. Too tall.
But yeah, the wrist, I think, really is what separated him. Because usually it's kind of firm, but he was kind of more floppy with the wrist of the way he counted.
Nick Patrick should be in there as well. The tallest referee I've ever seen. Sure.
Samoa Joe talking about joining the latest talking about retirement in the world of professional wrestling, saying that his current AEW deal will likely be his last before he retires. And a former TNA running mate and opponent of his, AJ Styles, reportedly going to be done after 2026 as well. So it looks like we're going to be losing a couple of quality professional wrestlers in the near future.
Two guys that didn't have to prove anything to anybody. I hope AJ Styles gets his flowers, by the way. The way that John Cena is getting his flowers. And by the way, this is not a work by AJ Styles. AJ said that when he was in his 30s, I'll never wrestle when I'm in my 40s. He's 47.
Yeah.
So he will not be some salmon coat and trying to tell people that I'm retiring and then make it a work. No, man, he's really going. And God bless him. He's at his age, Gabe. He doesn't look 47. He can still go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he wants to. I think he's one of those guys that doesn't want to have people think of him when he can't go the way he can even now. And he's probably, I mean, I think it's obvious. Like, if you go back and watch some of the TNA stuff, early TNA stuff, even early WWE stuff, or even go back to New Japan and what he did in that kind of interim before he joined WWE as part of the Bullet Club, like, he's probably lost a half of a step. I don't want to say he's lost a full step. But, like, how don't you at 47, right? But he doesn't want to lose that full step and then that step and a half. And next thing you know, you're Ric Flair having your last retirement match and Andrade has to wake you up. Like, that's just not the way I see this working for AJ Styles.
And with Samoa Joe,
yep.
great career, TNA Hall of Famer. Not sure about – probably not WWE Hall of Famer, but definitely a TNA Hall of Famer. And I would say, hey, man. Before your match on Saturday in St. Louis, cut the hair, okay? Let's not have the patch, okay? Looks like one of my divots on the golf course. Don't do that. Let's just shave it down, bald, and then move forward. Please. Looks bad.
A lot of success for TNA Bound for Glory, and taking some of that success, well, it was Matt Hardy, of course. In a post on X, talking about how the Hardys-Dudleys match of Bound for Glory reminds him of the final deletion. But also going on to say in this post, no matter what the internet, nobody say on social media, the Hardy Boys sell tickets in 2025, saying no disrespect to anybody else on the card, but everybody pretty much went there for the Hardys and the Dudleys in 2025.
Can I tell you a little secret? Nobody puts themselves over like professional wrestlers. you and I have covered sports for a long time. And even off the record, you won't hear athletes talking about how great they are. They might shit on somebody else, but they won't talk about how great they are because the numbers speak for themselves. But in professional wrestling game, I'm here to tell you, like, not no hyperbole. It is amazing how some professional wrestlers feel like, look at me, I'm the reason. Thank me for the house. I'm the reason why people watch. I'm the reason why people. And by the way, mostly those are baby faces that do that. I know that's surprising.
Yeah.
But it's baby faces. The real heels are the baby faces. I can't say I'm surprised at that quote because I heard Bully Ray say the same thing. He goes, no disrespect to Mike Santana or no disrespect to Trick Williams, but we're the reason why people came to Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yep. Not to be disrespectful towards the rest of the amazing roster on the show, but this is the match that set the new attendance record.
Brother, I could say so much, but I'll just say this. Like, it was a nice little nostalgia match that we saw with the Dudleys and the Hardys. It's awesome, right? You didn't draw the house. You're part of it, but you're not the reason why that there was reportedly 7,700 people there. You know why people came? Because they want to see Mike Santana's story. His alcoholism, his abuse of it, promising his daughter that, hey, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm not going to abuse my body. I dedicate this to you. That brought people to the house. That helped. And then Trick Williams is a draw, too. I mean, there's NXT fans that were there, too. Mm-hmm. So the idea that it was just a tag team match, if it was that good, they should have put it at the beginning or the end of the card. And they did not, because it was a nostalgia match where it belonged. So I just think that that's bullshit. I hate that, because all the men and women on that card worked hard. But to consider yourself the centerpiece, not surprising from some pro wrestlers.
And finally, a lot of people have been wondering in AEW, hey, where's Andrade? Had this big debut, part of the Don Callis family, and there was, you know, some different, okay, where is he? What's going to be happening? What's going on? Why has he just disappeared? Speculation about how he had ghosted AEW, then some vague reports of, well, I mean, it's they're in contact. It's nobody's fault that he's not on television. And then we get this report today that apparently AEW got a cease and desist letter from WWE from Wrestling Observer Radio. Brian Alvarez saying, I was told Andrade is not hurt. He didn't get himself fired. Apparently something is up involving his WWE non-compete. When he was fired, remember, we were told that WWE didn't care. Meltzer saying, that is what I've been hearing. WWE sent a letter and AEW obviously didn't know. AEW obviously believed there was no non-compete. So apparently that is what's going on right now with Andrade. WWE, despite declaring they did not care, did not want to see Andrade show up on AEW television.
Well, it's too late. He's already been on AEW TV. It's too late. But it's kind of bad business, Gabe. You get released from a company, there's usually a 90-day compete, especially if there's no injury. You know how they do this. Companies will keep you and tack it on because if there's an injury. There was no injury. Of course there's a 90-day compete. But you have to do your homework if you're AEW, look in those contracts and say, there's no 90-day compete. No, I can just come on and wrestle. Let me check into that before I just haphazardly throw you on my TV.
Well, but I mean, again, and AEW does need to do that. But it seemed like all the reporting around it, to Alvarez's point about WWE not caring, is that he probably got fired for cause. And I think there's just kind of a difference of when you get released, how you get fired. I'm sure all that matters in terms of the contract wording. But obviously somebody from AEW dropped the ball in the legal department of making sure that this does not happen.
AEW, folks. AEW.
What were your matches of the week?
Gabe Neitzel. We talked about Trick Williams in this matchup against Mike Santana. Is the right thing to do for Santana to be the champion. I've been a big fan of his for a while as a singles. I think this is the right thing to do. The way he handed the title to his daughter. Oh, my God. Tears, right? It's great. Javon Evans has been great. I saw Javon Evans against Leon Slater. Also saw Leon Slater against Amazing Red in HOG. That's on YouTube, by the way, if you want to see Amazing Red. You know, if you want to know where this flippy stuff came from, all the gymnastics you see, it started with Amazing Red in TNA and in the Independence. I saw Amazing Red against Leon Slater, and I thought that was a great match. And what we saw in the main event of Raw, to be able to see Asuka and Kairi Sane, and their matchup, I thought was fantastic as well.
I want to put out Cena versus AJ Styles. Was a lot of fun. Yeah. The way that they kind of, you know, started paying homage to all these different great opponents that each of them have had over the years and doing all the different finishers. It was just a really fun match. I really enjoyed it. I thought that was fantastic. The way that they kind of did all that. Cause this is, and what's great about that is supposedly that's how the whole thing started, when Cena did a Styles clash in a previous match. So then to kind of do all these other ones, I thought was a lot of fun. Last night, Claudio and Roderick Strong, I thought was a lot of fun on AEW Dynamite. I thought that was good.
They could do that match 100 times. And I think they have done at least 50 in the Ring of Honor. I think they actually have. When I think about it, I think they have done that match. The reason why you enjoyed that so much, because they know each other. And so I think that that works. Is there anything that we're missing? It's so much damn product, even outside of AEW, WWE, that I took in. Obviously, TNA Bound for Glory was extremely good. HOG, I mentioned, I watched a couple of matches. I saw Zilla Fatu against Bear Bronson. Zilla Fatu, man, he's going to be on a TV near you very, very soon. He's going to be there. WWE, man, he's going to be special. He's a high flyer, Zilla Fatu, part of that lineage, you know? That.
Fatu. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, but they just released one of the in NXT. I forget which part of the lineage they just released that we all thought was going to be coming. And I'm blanking on the name now that they just released within the last week or so. That we all thought was going to come up through the bloodline.
It's really a lot of fun just to watch some of this stuff. But I just think that we're in a great spot right now with wrestling. It, you know, AEW is going to have a great card in St. Louis. I almost went. I had an engagement. I was going to go and cover it for us in St. Louis, but, you know, I'm on Brewers Watch. So,
yeah, we're all on Brewers Watch. Lance Anoa, that's who they just released.
Yes, absolutely. I'm surprised that Brian did not put into the chat here the releases. Just as the amount of releases, just very quickly. WWE had WWE NXT UK. It disbanded. They've had other innovations, like the speed they were going to get away with. They're going to get away from the speed, and now I think that's an NXT thing. But now this WWE ID program, Gabe, it looks like I haven't heard much about it. It was a hot thing, and now they're getting rid of a lot of those guys from the ID program, including some NXT talent, and Rich Holland was released.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding, everything I read about those releases is if they don't think that you've got a future – they're pretty much not going to wait around anymore. That they think that that's a spot that they can use for somebody else. They're going to cut the fat and bring in a whole new class. So I'm expecting within the next month or so that we're going to see some new names getting signed to NXT that are going to replace the ones that just got released. And same thing with the ID program, that they're going to have, you know, they have X amount of spots. They want to make sure that you have potential to get up to the main roster. Otherwise, they're not going to, otherwise you're going to get released and they're going to fill them with somebody else they think that has potential and might be able to do that.
Yeah, but Rich Holland's got 5 kids, though. they cut him. They cut him with his contract being up. That sucks. He's injured for the next 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. He's got bills to pay, and now he doesn't have WWE money anymore. He's done. That's a shame.
If you haven't missed any of this show, any past interviews, make sure you go check out our YouTube page. Comment, subscribe, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. A lot of great content. Always making sure we're updating that outside of our weekly show. Each and every Thursday, we'll have that reaction to whatever's next for Cody. We'll have that reaction to Wrestle Dream all right here next week on GKW.